So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
Welcome to the show. Coming up in just a little bit will be Jim O'Day here with us. And we're going to talk about two important topics. One is, how has the devil been in the details for you during this pandemic? Have you found yourself with surprising new behaviors you can't quite shake yourself of? We'll be talking about that. And second, Jim O'Day, he's the executive director of Integrity Restored, will also join me to talk about bouncing back from a layoff and losing your job. It is an incredibly difficult experience that more people have found themselves in this year, but often many, especially men, find that this happens at some point during their career lifetime, if not multiple times. So we'll also discuss the impact this has particularly on men and their need to provide. I want to discuss for a minute here Amy Coney Barrett, Judge Amy Coney Barrett, the possible new Supreme Court Justice. I want to discuss her not from the perspective of politics and what she stands for, but the reaction that many women of faith have actually had to Barrett being sort of a new icon for women in the public sphere. It's fascinating. I was reading this New York Times article by Ruth Graham, and it's titled, "For Conservative Christian Women, Amy Coney Barrett's Success is Personal." In other words, women are resonating in a profound way with Judge Barrett. In fact, one piece from that article, this sentence really rung true when someone said it to me earlier today. It says in this New York Times article, "To Judge Barrett's fans, she is proof that women can be as ambitious maternally as they are professionally." I'll say that again. To Judge Barrett's fans, she is proof that women can be as ambitious maternally as they are professionally. Flip it whichever direction you want. We live in a culture where ambition is focused solely on career and education, not on children anymore. Yet there's another group of people who they're ambitious to have children. And so this whole conversation shifts to say you can be ambitious both as a mother and as a professional. And might I add that being ambitious professionally doesn't just include the job you do, but the way you can contribute to society. One thing that Barrett shows in her work is she's been involved on school boards, parish councils. She's been involved in many fields of her community for her children and for serious religious and even moral issues in society. But it's important that we find this balance and continue to have this conversation as women. I think that Judge Barrett has really struck a chord for many because she has 7 children, 2 of which are adopted from Haiti, and 1 who has special needs. Now, what it shows is that ambition doesn't mean being consumed by a one-track mind, but it also shows that you're setting the right priorities. See, so often people think, well, in order to be ambitious, you're only focusing on one thing, you're going for it, you're getting it, and you're succeeding all the time. No, to be ambitious means that you actually have priorities and you have your priorities straight. And so you have the right amount of time and balance when it comes to those ambitions. You see, women have to balance this act of their ambitions professionally and within the home in a way that men often don't. And this is one of the true challenges for women that I don't think we talk enough about. But this shouldn't leave a woman and her loved ones in a state of atrophy, as St. Edith Stein talks about. St. Edith Stein talks about how women can and should be involved in the workforce. It's a beautiful thing because, in fact, and we'll talk about this more later, when a woman is present, whether in the home or in the work environment. She helps prevent others, in particular men, from atrophying by seeing the personal dimension, by being a soft landing place of interaction and love and a human, real reaction that isn't just kind of becoming a cog in the machine of getting your job done and getting in and out. Don't get me wrong, getting in and out is good, but we're still human, not rats running in those little machines, continuously running and running and running. So Judge Barrett does show us something. You can't have it all. You have to find balance. And balance comes with setting priorities. One thing that Judge Barrett has shown very clearly is that children really do matter, and she and her husband have had to find a complementary way of managing caring for their children. In fact, Judge Barrett said this, "What greater thing can you do than raise children? That's where you have your greatest impact on the world. If only all mothers had this attitude." I know my own mother didn't really think that she would be a mom. When she was pregnant with me, it was a surprise to her. And I think a lot of women find themselves in that place, but what my mom has always said is her greatest achievement, her greatest contribution, her greatest responsibility is raising her children. And that priority always has to come first. I've seen countless women fight to maintain this balance, and more importantly, the priority of their marriage and children first. Amy Coney Barrett is a sign of the time of the great maternal call all women have, and the responsibility to keep your priorities in check. Don't become distracted by the fact that she may be our next Supreme Court justice. Be inspired, but remember that family really does matter. In fact, when I was looking at a recent story, back in October 2017, just an hour before Judge Barrett was voted in as judge for the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, Barrett was trick-or-treating with her kids on Halloween. Again, there's a balancing act that has to be played, and priorities have to come first. Another interesting icon that I think Judge Barrett sets in this current climate is the fact that countless laws have been made by Supreme Court justices on the basis that women need access to abortion in order to be on equal footing with men and participate in any form of education and career. In other words, access to abortion and contraception is necessary, and it has been drilled into women for the last few generations. Amy Coney Barrett and her family are living proof that abortion and contraception on demand is not necessary to contribute to society, to be a functioning member of the world. The feminine genius is something that we need to speak more about. You may recall St. John Paul the Great, in much of his work, he even called himself the feminist pope and talked about the importance of the feminine genius. That is the value of women in their many facets, both as mothers and, might I say, spiritual mothers in society. John Paul II discussed how, quote, "Progress can also lead to a gradual loss of sensitivity for man, that is, for what is essentially human." And then he points to women. He goes on to say, "In this sense, our time in particular awaits the manifestation of that genius which belongs to women." So what John Paul II is saying is that we've had all this progress, and he talks in Mulieri's Dignitatum, which is a letter he wrote on women, about how as this progress continues, for some it allows for greater flexibility, greater comfort, but for others it marginalizes them because they don't have access to these new technologies to ease life. But at the same time, how the personal dimension tends to be lost because of this industrial revolution, these new technologies. And so this is a time for women, for the great value women have in society. I think Stein, who lived and wrote at a similar time as JP2, although she didn't live as long, truly understood the feminine genius as the only personal touch that women bring to the world through their spiritual and physical motherhood, by their care and deep-seated awareness for others. This is what women are called to in society, and I think that this is something we will continue to see in a Barrett. And I think this is why she's resonating with so many women in our society. I find it fascinating, in fact, that the Women's March announced today that they will be marching yet again. They're rallying their troops for October 17th to object to Judge Barrett becoming our next Supreme Court justice. What a stark contrast between the acceptance of the nomination of Judge Barrett over the weekend and those nasty hats that the Women's March individuals wear and the horrible slogans they put on their signs. Again, Judge Barrett and her family are telling a different story. She's living proof that abortion and contraception on demand is not necessary to plan your family, have a career, or to have any form of education. You're listening to Trending with Timory. It's great to be with you. My guest today is Jim O'Day. He's the executive director of Integrity Restored, doing incredible work helping people who are in great desire of leaving the shackles that pornography has put on their own lives. Jim, thank you for joining me today.
Hey, Miss Timory. Great to be on here again. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm really looking forward to, in just a little bit, talking about bouncing back from a layoff or losing your job. But before we go there, some pretty nasty habits have come up during this pandemic. And as you said when we were talking before, the devil really is in the details of the pandemic. And we find ourselves in this new, quote, ordinary life that can lead to some pretty big surprises. What do you see are maybe the top three behaviors that are most common, especially among people you've worked with?
Well, I think it's interesting because this pandemic has, in some ways and in some cases, brought out the best in people and in their behavior. And then in many, many more ways, probably brought out the worst. And there's an interesting book out there called The Devil You Don't Know, written by Father Louis Camilli. And he offers in that book four ordinary ways that the devil uses to tempt us. Deception, division, diversion, and discouragement. And in this pandemic, I think we've all recognized times of deception, certainly in this country right now, division. Diversion, obviously, with social media and the news media. And then discouragement, just how we can feel getting very discouraged during the day. And then the behaviors start to come out, Timory, like you said. Mm-hmm. And the top three that I've seen in my work here at Integrity Restored is increased amount of time spent with pornography, or kind of this accelerating, looking for harder and harder pornography. That would be number one. So increased time or an accelerated usage of pornography. The second thing that we don't often think when we come to pornography is family abandonment. So these men, and in some cases women.
Oh, I think that we dropped Jim there for a second. We'll get connected with him. But I want to come back to summarizing this book that he's talking about, The Devil You Don't Know, and the four ways the devil gets into the details. Deception, division, diversion, and discouragement. Wow, the devil is so cunning to deceive us, to cause this separation, this division, to divert our attention and to discourage us. It's so easy you feel frustrated or depressed by what's going on in the world. I mean, talk about what we've faced this year. We've faced a quarantine, being locked in at home. We've even faced food shortages, unheard of here in the United States. We're facing a very polarized election and Supreme Court nomination. Riots. What a year. And so is it any surprise that while many have been brought closer together during the quarantine, for others, the devil has been in the details? He's deceived us to make us believe and justify certain new patterns of behavior. He's caused division, for some people, dividing them even perhaps just physically from the presence of others, creating loneliness and isolation and solitude. Even just think of the people alone in the hospitals. Diversion, how we've been so diverted perhaps from the track and the focus we need to keep in mind. Those goals we have that are so important, even just our spiritual and personal growth. And discouragement, that I'm failing anyways. This year's been hard. Might as well just stop everything. It's like that diet. When you start working on a diet and you fail once and you're discouraged, so you just keep eating bad food. This is where we see the devil in the details of these bad habits. I believe we have Jim O'Day back, and I want to hear you. We're talking about three bad behaviors that have developed most commonly in the people you see you work with at Integrity Restored. You said increased time with porn or accelerating types of porn they're looking for. And you were starting to tell us about family, that second point.
Yeah, one of the things that we don't think about is that the further they go into this addiction, Timory, then they have less and less time for their family. Because this addiction calls you to be isolated, to be separated. So the family then becomes this impediment to them doing what they want. So moms, dads, sons, daughters, sisters, brothers, aunts, uncles, they all start to pull away from each other so they can continually feed that porn habit. And then the final thing that we've really noticed a lot, and this has been within the past 90 days, we've been getting a lot more calls from couples about really kind of ramping up the fighting. And there's a lot of reasons for that, right? It's not only porn usage. There's stress, there's financial stress, there's insecurity, there's all kinds of things that make it tough for a couple that this pandemic has exacerbated. But if you are addicted to porn, the way you look at other people also colors how you behave with other people. And those other people can be the people you love the most. And yet porn is just changing your view. And so I would say those are the top three things we've noticed during this pandemic. You know, the loneliness, the boredom, the isolation, the fear, that makes it easy for the devil. He doesn't have to work so hard. And he knows how to use the tools of deception, division, diversion, and discouragement. But it's important for us all to remember that temptation in and of itself is not a sin. What we do with the temptation can be.
So what tools do you give or help to build up in people you work with at Integrity Restored in order to overcome those temptations and change their behavior patterns?
So that's a great question, because one of the first things we can do, first of all, we recommend strong scientific counseling, because this is truly an addiction. Like any other, alcoholism, drugs, gambling, and you're going to need help, so counseling. The second would be an increase in your spiritual life and spiritual direction. And then the third is community and accountability. Now, that's the kind of the healing process. But if you're hit with a temptation, here's something you can absolutely do. The first thing I tell people to do is pray. At that very moment, pray and offer that temptation to our Lord. He wants to accept it. The second thing is 15-minute active distraction. Get up from where you are, usually in your room or in your office or wherever you're all alone. Go somewhere else in the house. Be with other people. Go do push-ups. Go for a walk around the block. Play with the dog. It doesn't matter. Do something for 15 minutes that actively distracts your mind, and that temptation will have passed.
This is a great one. I always say, I think we don't talk about this enough. I'm a mover. I was just talking to someone the other day. We have our birthing class tonight, and the poor people, like, we're not in person, so I have to sit in front of the computer for 3 hours at night watch this class. It's horrible. And they want us to have video participation. I, like, want to get up and walk around while I listen. I maybe want to stretch. Yeah. And so the poor teacher probably is so annoyed by me, my hyperactivity here. But I bring this up because we don't in general move enough. And for me, being someone who's a dancer, I'm a Pilates trainer, like, physical activity is so important. And yet I see people struggling with temptations. And part of it is, I think we're just lacking physical exertion sometimes. I've talked to so many priests and they talk about, you know, how do we remain chaste and celibate? Well, having active physical life is one great way, whether you're a priest or a single person or married with a high sex drive, stay physically active. That helps you to have self-control.
Absolutely right. And I'll share a very personal story. When I was a young man, I went to a priest for confession that I knew very well. And I was struggling with masturbation. And I was talking to the priest about it. And he said, Jimmy, we were doing face-to-face. He said, Jimmy, every time you are struggling with that, drop down and do some push-ups till you're tired. You won't want to do it anymore. Well, honestly, I got in the best shape of my life. I'll say that. That is so true. Our brains, sometimes out of boredom, will drive us to pornography or masturbation or eating or whatever the habit is that we don't want to do. But if we get up and move and be physical and exercise and get that blood flowing, boy, it makes you feel great. It dumps endorphins and you're not running to that bad habit.
Mm-hmm. That reminds me a lot.
You're doing something really good.
Yeah, that reminds me, Jim, and if you're just joining us, that's Jim O'Day from Integrity Restore. They're doing incredible work to help people who are struggling with porn addiction. You can find them at integrityrestored.com. What you're saying reminds me of the attention-seeking need we have that's so profound. I mean, our fingertips are tingling to have some sort of notification or interaction on social media. And that push-up example you just gave reminds me that even when we're looking for attention on social media, you know, I think of the young teenage girls who are posting kissy faces of themselves as their profile picture or, you know, maybe posing a particular way that's just asking for it. If we were to only be a little more physically present in our bodies, aware of our bodies, we wouldn't be trying as hard for other people to be aware of our bodies. And so, again, I feel like this comes back to that importance of exercise and physical activity. Can you share a little bit more about how that has played an important role for you in training people who do jiu-jitsu?
No, absolutely. One of the best things about training in the martial arts is it doesn't matter how old you are. So we've had little kids or, you know, 70-year-old students. And the beauty is once they start to learn what their body can do, people are just amazed, right? Mm-hmm. I can move. I can be flexible. And now a 4-year-old can't do what an 18-year-old can do. And a 70-year-old can't do what a 30-year-old can do. But you can still do so much more than you think you can. Your body is so much more capable. And it will feel so good. You know, here in my office, I've been doing a lot of recordings. You know, we have that Integrity Circle coaching program that we've talked about, Tim or Ann. I've been doing a lot of recordings. So I went out and got myself straps. So in between recording sessions, I'm working out here in my office with these easy straps. And it's so great because I'll record something, then I take a break, do something physical, and it's almost if my mind, the light turns on again after I do that.
Little do we know, Jim O'Day's in between segments doing bicep curls with his dumbbells there. We'll be right back with Jim O'Day. Don't mind, he'll be sweating when we come back. We'll be talking about how to bounce back from a layoff or losing your job.
We're talking about what you're thinking about. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
At some point in your career, for most men, they experience a layoff or losing their job. With the current crisis of the world with COVID and how our economy has been shut down in so many places, many have faced for the first time, men and women, layoffs and losing their job. Jim O'Day from Integrity Restored, who has had an incredible past working in multiple fields, not only in the nonprofit world. I feel like this is kind of your end of your career joy to be working with people in crisis. But share a little bit about your career and your thoughts on the crisis so many people are facing with this layoff.
Sure, Timory. So I had an amazing career in my life. I worked as an executive in sales and marketing in three industries, consumer products, defense, and homeland security, before I got into not-for-profit work. And it was really when I got into not-for-profit work that I found my calling, my alignment, if you will. I was very successful in the corporate world, but here's where I found that I just felt like I fit. And so many men today, as you indicated, are struggling because they've been laid off or furloughed or completely terminated and let go. And we have guys have such a problem with our manhood. Don't go there, Timory. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about our manhood in our minds is our work.
Mm-hmm.
And that's wrong.
Right. So when something like this happens, you're toppled over. You've hit a wall, and this can lead to depression, anxiety,
yes,
withdrawing from the family. And many people are going through this now.
Your very identity, your self-worth, your self-respect, your desire to provide family security, all those things have just been thrown up in the air by someone else's stroke of a pen. It can feel like.
Mm-hmm.
But what we have to do is look at this as an opportunity, not an obstacle. We have to be fair with ourselves. And losing a job, and it's happened to me, losing a job can cause grief. And that's okay. That's normal. Process it while you're looking for the next opportunity. You know, I tell people who reach out to me, reflect on what you loved about your last job, but also about what you hated. Reflect on what you did really well and where you needed improvement. And then go out and look for support. You have a network of people you know, and even if they can't hire you, the advice they can give you, the introductions they can make for you, the support, the just counsel and a shoulder to lean on, that's so important. Then take the time for some self-improvement. You have some time now. Take a course online. There's tons of great stuff out there. Something that interests you. It doesn't even matter if it's job-related. Just get the synapses firing in your brain. Then you can start considering different options, like relocation, if it's something you wanted to do. And the most important thing I tell people is create a schedule. Because right now, your job search is your job.
Exactly. Dedicate that same amount of time to finding a job.
Yeah.
I love that. These are all such good tips for kind of to help guide and kind of refocus yourself, evaluate what you liked, what you didn't like. And I think one of the challenges, though, is, okay, we set a schedule. We start looking for jobs. We start doing some of the training that you're recommending to kind of grow during that time. But what advice do you have for regaining a sense of value in order to move forward?
Couple great things that can be done there. Now you have some extra time and maybe you have unemployment or you got a severance package or whatever. Take advantage of that. Volunteer. think outside your box. I never in a million years, I promise you, when I was in those executive roles, would have thought that I would be working in a nonprofit industry. Now, in all fairness, the money is different. I don't make anywhere near the money I used to make, but I'm happy and I love what I do. So think, use that time to volunteer with things you care about, learn some new skills, and be open to new industries or roles that utilize your experience, not necessarily the skills that you have. I think of a really, really good friend of mine now who was a CPA working for a big, big consulting firm and just traveling all the time, like 300 days a year or something stupid, and just burned out. And he got a job working for a nonprofit as a fundraiser. He never thought he could do that. Mm. Well, he's doing a great job and he loves what he does. So think outside the box. Don't keep yourself, you know, none of us like when somebody else puts us in a box. But boy, we do it to ourselves all the time.
All the time. Wow. It's so true. And, you know, we think that, well, I have to stay in this specific field because that's what I've done for all of these years, or these are my skills. We have so many skills and hobbies and talents that are untapped or unutilized in the workforce, or that we haven't even fully developed, that are there and just waiting to be used. You know, we're not just what we do. We're who we are. And that does influence what we do.
And your skills that you've picked up along the way, along your career, are transferable. Just because you're a chemical engineer doesn't mean you couldn't be a phenomenal executive director or a really incredible store manager of a antique store, because that's what you love. That's what you are passionate about. That's what you know a lot about. Think about your skills in broader terms than just your industry.
Jim, I want to dive into, you know, we've talked about regaining that sense of value, seeing yourself outside of the job you've just worked in. What do you think is the most difficult part of losing a job, and how can it be overcome?
Well, I can tell you in my personal experience, when I lost a job, it came as a shock, which I think it does for a lot of people. The company just went out of business, and Monday morning no longer had a job. Mm-hmm. And so my first response was anger. And I think that's okay. Right? We shouldn't be surprised at that if we're angry that this happened. But then followed closely right on the heels of that is fear. Mm-hmm. And that shouldn't surprise us either. And it's okay to be fearful, because that can activate us to do things. You know, give us that little kick of adrenaline in the fight or flight syndrome. Well, what are you going to do about it? Are you going to run away and hide? Or are you going to fight and go find something to take care of your family? So I think anger and fear can be two really surprising emotions that people feel when this happens, but both can be really valuable.
And it's such an important moment to talk about, kind of having a sense of awareness when you're experiencing, you know, anger or fear, that these are fleeting emotions. They're emotions that are that'll pass away, but we can either be consumed by them or use them to channel what's happening and how we can move forward. And I think that that's so important. Yet for some reason, so many people have a difficult time overcoming that hurdle of how to handle that emotion. What would you advise, especially because you work with a lot of people who are experiencing emotions surrounding pornography addiction, what do you advise when people are having a difficult time with this emotional integrity?
Well, and the first thing is recognizing that what you're feeling is normal, right? When our brains react to strong emotions, whatever those strong emotions are, there's certain reactions, increased respiration, muscle tensing, anxiety, shaking, crying. There are a whole range of things that can happen. That's all normal. But the beauty is you can control all that. You are not at the mercy of your emotions. You can choose how to respond to them. If it gets to the point where it's overwhelming, there's absolutely professional help. And things like cognitive behavior therapy work really well. So there's help you can get if it feels overwhelming. But if it feels like you can manage it yourself, well, exercise is another good one. Again, for this topic, when you're feeling that anger, that stress, that anxiety, exercise, and then get back to your job hunt.
Okay, final question here. How does someone start looking for a new job? You mentioned tapping into your network. You mentioned setting a schedule. What other tips do you have for those people who want to bounce back? They're working on kind of controlling those emotions that are passing, the sense of feeling devalued because of the loss of job. Where do we start looking?
Okay, so there's so many good books out there on this. But there's some really simple things we can do. Number one, tap into our network. And that means everybody in our network. And if you can have coffee, I know it's a little tougher now, but if you can have a virtual coffee every day with somebody different in your network and have a conversation, that's a home run. The second thing is your church, your local parish, your local church, even other local churches in your area are often great resources for getting back into the employment field. A lot of them have groups now, or one day a month, a speaker will come in. Those are great opportunities to take advantage of. Third, LinkedIn. Build yourself a profile, get on there, get involved in groups in your industry or industries you're interested in, and start having conversations. Those virtual networks will help open up other opportunities for you. And then finally, the last thing I tell people is pray, because God has a job in mind for you. And it certainly may not be the job you're thinking of, because he does have a sense of humor that way. But he does have a job in mind for you.
And just a brief comment on that. You know, we may have a plan for the type of job we want, where we want to work. I'll never forget when I was in undergrad, I was interviewing at some of the local crisis pregnancy centers to look at where I wanted to work in pro-life work, and had this incredible interview at one of the crisis pregnancy centers. And you have to know, the one topic I said I'll never work on is the topic of chastity. Anything to do with abortion, teaching on abortion. I mean, I hated public speaking, but I was willing to do it for the abortion issue. And then here I am in this interview, and the interview was great. The dynamic, everything. I went, okay, Lord, I said, this is it. You know, I'm going to work here. Like, whatever you want me to do, I'm here. And I say this in a prayer during the interview. And then the next words out of my soon-to-be boss's mouth was, so I'd like to hire you, and I'd like you to head up our chastity education program, going into the schools and into the churches, talking about chastity. And I went, oh, good Lord, you've got to be kidding me. The one thing, I just don't want to talk about sex, please, really? Like, I believe in chastity and all of that. And I use that as an example because God is sometimes calling us to have that level of abandonment, openness, and willingness to his will. And sure, you may not be working in a nonprofit field, but you have incredible gifts that you can give in a completely secular field that could develop a friendship that you could have an influence over, or a client that will participate in transforming someone's life. And that's where God was calling you, and part of the reason why he allowed you to suffer in order to get there.
Absolutely. Hey, I think we talked about it once. My reversion, if you will, my coming back into the church happened in the workplace, in a secular job. Because I had a boss who was willing to say, to call me out and say, you're not a good husband, you're not a good father, and you're certainly not a good Catholic. So we all have these opportunities. God creates these things. And he does have a sense of humor. I can promise you, never in a million years would I have imagined I run an anti-porn ministry.
You've worked in Homeland Security, you name it. You've been into some of the top sales and business industries. Here you are working with people who are struggling with pornography addiction. That's Jim O'Day, a regular guest here on Trending. You can find him, his work, and the incredible resources for yourself, a friend, or even their coaching program to help you help others with a pornography addiction. Just head over to integrityrestored.com. Again, that's integrityrestored.com. We'll be right back talking about our feast day today, our three archangels. So let's see if everyone knows who they are. Go ahead and head over to my Instagram story and name them without Googling. We'll be right back here on Trending with Timory.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Okay, tell me, I would love to know, how did you pick a baby name? I hear people talk about it, they get into fights. They decide one spouse chooses the first child, then the other spouse chooses the next. But then you get stuck with a name you may really dislike when that happens. I don't know. I'd love to hear you. If you don't know, we are expecting our first baby. There are heartbeat sounds and photos of our baby up on social media. If you head over to Instagram, I put up on my Instagram story a question box where you can type in and tell me how you chose baby name. And maybe you might even throw in there a funny story about the debate or maybe some of the worst names that your spouse chose for that baby. But then they come up with good ones as well. So we're having a baby girl. We're so excited. Go ahead and head over to my Instagram story at Timory. That's TimmerIe. We'll be discussing your wisdom on choosing a baby name coming up here later this week. We have a caller calling in from Hercules, California. She is a sophomore in high school wanting to talk about starting a Christian club at her school. Kiara, welcome to Trending. Kiara, are you there?
Yes. So I wanted to make a Christian club at my school, but I go to a public school, so a lot of the things that we cover in Christianity, or especially in Catholicism, are pretty controversial. I didn't want to get super political because I don't want to set up a barrier between someone's faith versus politics, but I know that something so important like life and pro-life matter is something so important, and I'm pro-life, and I would love to show that Christianity and the pro-life movement are so close together. But like, let's say someone is pro-choice, and then they're like, oh, they're pro-life, I'm not going to join the club. I don't want to set up any political barriers just because of someone's view. What do you think?
That's a great question, Kiara. I'm really excited for you wanting to start this Christian club at your school and bring up important topics such as the pro-life issue. I have four tips that I just throw out there. Number one, plan what you want to cover for the year. So plan various topics, whether it's the abortion issue, a specific perspective on abortion. Maybe you just want to bring a speaker in who's had this incredible conversion to their faith. Or perhaps there's someone who chose to keep their baby and faced a crisis pregnancy situation. So what you can do is you can maybe, instead of, you know, thinking like, hey, we're dealing with this intense issue, maybe you invite a speaker, someone to share their testimony so that it's more so come and listen to their story. That's one idea I have. So plan your year, plan out various events you want to have, and just think about the way you phrase things. Be creative rather than saying, you know, pro-life versus pro-abortion, or, you know, our conversation on abortion. Maybe you just throw out there one woman's crisis pregnancy. You watch how you phrase various topics. So invite speakers, plan your year. Those are the first two. Number three, I want you to know there are times, because I've been there. I remember starting a pro-life club at a Catholic university, and next to no one showed up at first. But because I stayed consistent, people showed up with time. Or sometimes there were 5 people, sometimes there were 30 people. It would just depend on the day. And so don't worry if no one shows up at times. You're consistent, you're there, you're saying something's going to happen, and you're there for them so that they can know. But with that, I want to encourage you, stick with it, because your consistency is really going to help with how people react. So watch your messaging, what types of talks or topics you cover, and, you know, try not to be too controversial at times, but then perhaps there are controversial topics you can bring up that might stimulate people to be curious as to what you're covering. That's Kiara from California wanting to start a Christian club at her high school. Good luck, Kiara. We're very excited for you and proud of you for wanting to speak up for your faith and for the pro-life issue. I want to talk just a second here about our feast day today. It's a feast day of the three archangels, Raphael, Gabriel, and Michael. And I don't think we turn to these saints often enough. These saints, or should I say angels, it's always confusing here. They're saints or they're angels? They're angels, but we refer to them often as saints because we just don't say angel all the time. I think it's sometimes hard for us to just ponder. But looking at some of these names, I want to just talk about St. Michael for a second. Pope Leo XIII in 1886 ended up composing that prayer that we know well as the St. Michael prayer. Many churches at the time started praying it directly after Mass. It's been pretty neat over the last few years because this is something that has returned to our Catholic tradition after having been lost. And we have seen as a church the necessity of being protected in this spiritual battle, this warfare that we're up against. But why do we turn to St. Michael? Well, we turn to St. Michael in particular because his name actually means who can compare to God. Now, this is significant if we pay attention to the story of St. Michael that we look at in Revelation. There's a battle in heaven between the angels, and Michael chooses to serve God while Lucifer, that is Satan, chooses not to serve God. And it's pride that's at the heart of this decision of the fallen angel Lucifer. There's this attitude that we can be happy and choose our own path. We don't need God. Versus Michael contradicts Lucifer. He chooses to serve. And he does this by saying, who is like God? Who's equal to God? So Michael's title, his name Michael, embodies his devotion to our Lord, his sense of humility. How can we be inspired by St. Michael the Archangel's humility and humble ourselves in the sight of our Lord? We'll be back tomorrow. Can't wait to join you.
Day 22, Virgin Most Merciful, pray for us. The title Virgin Most Merciful reminds us of our Lord's words at the Sermon on the Mount. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. At the end of the world, when we're all lined up for Judgment Day and Jesus Christ is sitting on his judgment seat, I don't think any of us will be asking for justice, even if we're part of the peace and justice crowd during our lifetime. If we're honest with ourselves, we'll all be begging for mercy. I know I will be. And what is mercy? It means giving people a break, letting them off the hook, giving them a hand, cutting them some slack. Just like our Lord did with a poor woman caught in adultery. Woman, has no one condemned you? No one, Lord. Neither do I condemn you. And he never brought up the subject again. Virgin Most Merciful, pray for the church and our nation.